I'm Rita.
Hi, Rita.
And I'm an alcoholic. Well, I'm glad you're here. And, you know, whenever asked to be of service, I like to do what I can. I've been sober for 18 years. And I'm 68. I just turned 68 today. Yeah. Yeah, and so 50 years ago, I went to rehab, and I was living in Tulare, California. I went to a little place called Maynard's in Tuolumne County, and it was real far away from my home, and I had to get away from all the people that I knew and my family, and I went there sober, surprisingly enough. It wasn't that hard for me because I didn't get sober because I had a problem with alcohol. I thought I was fine. I wasn't an alcoholic, but apparently my husband thought I was. And he said, if you don't stop, if you I want a divorce because you're an alcoholic. I said, I'm not an alcoholic. I can quit drinking. And he goes, well, if you can quit drinking, then I'll stay married to you. And I said, well, I can do that. And it was easy. It was easy for me. Because the main problem I had when I drank was I became a mean drunk. I'd go to weddings, and I had a lot of sisters and brothers, so I'd go to weddings. My family, I came from a big family. They didn't tell me I was passing out at these weddings. And my husband finally told me one day, I'm never going to a wedding with you again. One day he told me that, and I said, well, why not? And he goes, because you pass out at every wedding. And I go, no, I don't. No, I don't. You're wrong. And he goes, yes, you do. I'm not going. And that was the beginning of the end. But my family never told me. I'd wake up and I'd go, where'd everybody go? You know, I didn't realize I had passed out at a function with 500 people. And, I'll start when I was young. My dad was an alcoholic. And I grew up in a real... there was a lot of tension in the house, and my mother was a really good Catholic, and there was 11 of us. I was the youngest, and I was pretty far from my brothers and sisters, so I was like an only child. They were all older than me, so. Anyway, there was a lot of parties. Big Mexican family with a lot of parties. Everything was a baptism. There was beer and alcohol, a wedding. It was just everything alcohol related. So anyway, the tension in the home and the fighting and, my dad would get drunk and make everybody leave the house. There'd be a lot of screaming after a big function. And then the next day, nobody would act like anything happened. Everything was just be quiet. Don't talk about it. So that's how I was raised. And... I couldn't wait to get away from my family, so I joined the Army at 19. And I had a lot of toxic relationships before that with men who would beat me up. And it always ended up that way. I always found these guys who liked to beat up women. And I don't know why. I'd meet a nice guy, and I didn't like him because he was too boring. He was just not exciting enough. I think it was what I was used to, basically. So I ended up going into the Army because I was running away from a guy who wanted to kill me. And then I went to Germany, and I met a lot of toxic people there. And I did a lot of drugs and alcohol, but I had a good time. I did get a lot of skills. And then I moved to San Diego to be with a guy that I met there who eventually started beating up on me because I was an angry drunk. Every time I'd get drunk, I'd start a fight. So we ended up separating, and in San Diego, I ended up spending about 10 years there and just went through a lot of relationships and work and a lot of cocaine. And I discovered there was a lot of drug dealers out there. And boy, I could spot one in a crowd, and I'd be living with him the next day. I did that a couple of times. That was a lot of fun, because there was a lot of violence, a lot of tension, and, you know, guns and cartel and, you know, stuff like that, people like that. And it just it wasn't a good environment. So I ended up moving back to Tulare County to basically dry out. My unemployment had ran out. I'd ran out of all my friends. I had no friends. I had no money. And I took my suitcase and went home to Mom to dry out, basically. And I met my husband. And my husband was like no other man I had met. He was, I'll describe my husband to you. I met him at a bar, and we were all dancing and having fun. I had a bunch of good friends who had, who didn't really party that much. They just drank. There wasn't a lot of cocaine. But we ended up at his apartment one day, like after I'd known him two or three days. And his neighbor met me in the parking lot and said, "Hey, you're here with Mike?" And I said, "Yeah." And he goes, "You want to come to my apartment, you and Mike, and we'll do some coke?" And I said, "Yeah, sure." You know, so I went and told my husband. I said, "Hey," I mean, my husband, now my boyfriend then. I said, "Mike, your neighbor wants to do some coke. Let's go." He goes, "Oh, you met my neighbor." And I go, "Yeah, come on." And he goes, "Well, hold on. You go ahead and get your stuff and don't come back." And I go, "What?" We just had 3 days of, you know, premarital bliss, you know. And and I go, "What?" And he goes, "Yeah, no, you go ahead. It was nice knowing you." And I said, "Oh, so you're telling me you don't want to go do this? We don't have to go." And he goes, "Well, if you don't have to, then don't. And don't ever talk to him again. That's how I don't talk to him, because I don't do cocaine. I don't do those kind of drugs. I have to go to work in the morning, you know, I got responsibilities. And I go, "Oh, okay." He goes, "You don't even have to go tell him, just don't go." And I go, "Okay." And it was really rather odd to me that someone had given me that option and accepted me and cared for me still and liked me even, and didn't go, "You're a scum, go, just, you know, whatever, you know, go do your thing, you know, see you later," and call me names. I wasn't used to a person like that. I'd never met anyone like him. So I said, "I'm going to marry this man." So I married him. But I wasn't very happy because I was bored out of my mind. I got pregnant right away and had a baby, and the fighting ensued. And I started to live just like my mom and dad did. But we stayed together. We stayed together for 17 years. And I ended up finally, after the kids grew up and got a job. I went back to school, got a job, and I just had to get out of the house. I didn't want to be a stay-at-home mom. He had a great job. I was a stay-at-home mom. You know, we were on a tight budget, but I was just bored out of my mind and drinking every weekend and going dancing, you know, and almost getting DUIs wasn't enough for me. So I had to get out of the house and be with people. So I got a job at the prison, Corcoran State Prison. And what do you do there when you're sick and alcoholic? You meet other sick alcoholics. And boy, was there a lot. So Yeah. I made a lot of friends that were not very nice. I especially made one friend who wasn't real happy in his marriage. And he said we should both divorce our spouses at the same time for fun. You know, so it was just going to be a thing we did. He goes, man, you could get so much money from Mike and you'll be living on that spousal support. So I fell for it. I fell for it, a hook, line, and sinker. And I started cheating on my husband. We were going to motels after work, and I'd come home and say I would gone and have drinks with my boss or with my coworkers, and my husband never questioned me. He trusted me explicitly because my husband is one of those people who's confident in himself. He doesn't have to worry about me because I'm an adult. So he trusted me. So this went on for a while. And I didn't realize that this guy I was getting involved with was very controlling, and he was a little insane, I think. He was literally working that job in the hospital and working in another hospital where he was disposing of body parts. That's what this is job. It was a hazmat job. And he was selling them on the internet. That's what this guy was doing. He was in trouble. He was selling stuff that was the Hell's Angels trademark. He was selling it, and they were after him. The Hell's Angels were after him. So he was a genius on the computer, and he knew everything about computers. So he was a very dangerous person, and I found out the hard way. I tried to break up with him. Well, that didn't go very well. And I became the victim of, I got myself into it, but I couldn't break up with him. I couldn't break it off. And I ended up just kind of like going along with it, going, okay, well, let's get this divorce. And so I ended up getting a divorce from my husband and still seeing this guy while he was seeing other girls. And I was trying to break it off with him, and so I had all this going on, and I ended up getting a divorce from my husband, and I was divorced from my husband for almost a year, and I lost my kids eventually because I was drinking a lot. I was doing a lot of drugs, and I was working, and I was going to a therapist, and my therapist told me, you got to get away from this guy. You're going to end up dead in a ditch. My therapist fired me because I wouldn't stop seeing this guy. He said, I can't do this anymore. I don't cover your insurance anymore. That was a lie. I knew that wasn't true. Anyway. I ended up, my husband bought me out from the house. And the whole time my husband and I were talking, my husband was sympathetic towards me. And he knew I was drinking and drugging and I was in trouble. He knew it. And I finally ran out of money. I went through 80 grand in a year. And I was working at a prison, making almost 5 grand a year. I ran through it all. My kids didn't want to see me anymore. I lost them because I got into a fight with my daughter over the phone. I was drunk. And my husband went to court, and he played the recording to the judge, and the judge said, no, you don't, you lose the kids. That was it. That was the straw that broke the camel's back for me. And I ran out of money, and it's funny, then that's when Terry, the crazy man, disappeared. You know, it's like kind of worked out that really well that way. Yeah, so anyway, my husband finally came to my house, and I wanted to tell him I needed to see the kids. I was scared. And he looked at me and he said, are you ready to come home? And I was like, is that an option? Yes, I am. And we had gotten a divorce. So he took me back. We got remarried. And this is how my alcoholic, I was still an alcoholic, right? In my full on, I was drinking hard liquor by then. And he just wanted his children's mother back. But then we got remarried. A week later, we were in a fight. I threw a lamp at him. I was in a drunken rage. And he said, oh, you know what? I want another divorce. And I said, what? You want what? And he goes, yeah, you're an alcoholic. Well, I'm going to interject something here. While we were divorced, my husband's attorney advised him not to drink at all. So he was sober the entire year we were separated and divorced. He goes, I see the signs now. You're an alcoholic and you're a danger to the children. And he said these things to me and I said, oh, shoot, I think he's right. I said, you know what? I think you're right. And I talked to another alcoholic cousin of mine. And I said, how'd you do it? And she goes, oh, I just cold turkeyed it. I go, if you can go to rehab, would you go? And she said, yeah, I'd go, definitely. So I ended up going. That's how I went to rehab, sober. My husband, of course, said, if you stop drinking, we'll be fine. So I did. I went to rehab. I went to Maynard's. I was like, oh, clean as the driven snow, right? This is easy. Shit, I can do this. I want my stuff. I want my kids, you know. I want my pride, you know. I'm better than all that, you know. And we got past all the Terry stuff. You know, he sicked the Hell's Angels on my husband a couple of times. Somehow, it's a long story. But, you know, we got past all that. He got bored with us and moved on to another woman to harass. Thank God. But I came back from rehab, you know, thinking, yeah, this is it. I'm good to go. That was 18 years ago. And I went to meetings, you know, 90 and 90. I did it. Wow, so good. And then I went on ahead and I started getting bored with the meetings. You know, it's like, no, I don't want to do this. And there's a lot of codependency in my family. A lot. So they were telling me I didn't need meetings. You know, you're okay. You're not like them. You're not like those people. Like that guy. You're not like him. And I go, oh, I think you're right. Of course. So I didn't go to meetings. And I thought I was okay. And things started happening. I started feeling all the feels. I wasn't able to drink anymore. And I started seeing a therapist, and the therapist was like, you got to go to meetings. You know, you got to do that. And I was like, well, no, my husband said I don't have to. You know, I'm okay, and I'm not drinking. And I'm not craving alcohol. And she goes, well, you still have all the, and she started telling me all the isms and all the terminology, and did you do the steps? And I was like, oh, God. So I stopped seeing her, of course. She's boring. So, you know, I went back to my, you know, I can do it by myself. So I dry drunked it for 10 years. So I white knuckled it. And amazingly enough, my life got really better. My life, everything improved. My life got to the point where, you know, I had PTSD from the Army. There was an attempted rape, and sexual harassment, and that was one of the reasons why I got out of the Army, was because my sergeant wouldn't let me do my job unless I did something for him. And so I just left the Army. It was, and I talked to a really good therapist, finally. And I finally was able to listen because I wasn't craving alcohol and drunk and stupid. And this therapist told me, you have PTSD due to military sexual trauma. That's what it's called. And I go, oh, is that why I haven't been able to keep a job? You know, he said, that's why you can't keep a job. You came from trauma in your home. You know, you had an alcoholic father. You have trauma. And I finally heard a therapist for the first time. Now, mind you, I've been going to therapists since I was 20, thinking that they could help fix me and take away my crazy town mind. But I finally had a therapist tell me something that made sense. You know, I have PTSD due to MST, and I'm going to put you on disability. I'm going to put you on disability because you can't keep a job. I kept getting fired from jobs. And I'd get a job and I'd lose it within a year. So I ended up, he said, your job is to stay home and fix your family, fix your relationship with your family. Because you have a lot of trauma. So I thought, okay, I can do that. And then you know, I ended up staying home, and it got a little better. It got a little better. I ended up going also. He also, what is it called? I ended up getting money from the military for my PTSD due to MST claim. So I literally had everything coming towards me. And I attribute it to the fact that I stopped drinking. Everything started happening and coming towards me. But I wasn't happy. I wasn't coming to meetings. I wasn't talking really honestly to my therapist. The hardest thing for me to do was to be honest. And I could hear all the things, like, yes, you have trauma, you have this, you have that. And but I was still that lying, cheating, stealing person. And I still wanted to cheat. I still, you know, I'd go to, you know, if they had self-checkout back then, I would have, you know, yeah, sure. Yeah, here's two bottles. You know, and, you know, I would have done all the things, you know, I would have done all that. And that was when I was sober. And I think back on that, and it was, I didn't want to be honest with myself. But I was sober, and my life was getting better. So it was a confusing time. And I felt a lot of shame, because while I was drinking and while I was an alcoholic parent, I was really, really mean to my kids. I would yell and scream at them. It was just like at home with my mom and dad. But once I stopped drinking, all that shame crept in, and it was really painful. It was really, really painful to know that I had driven with my kids in the car drunk, cheated on my husband. You know, and I was forgiven for all those things. I was forgiven, but the shame that I felt inside me, I didn't know what to do with it. So, you know, it was just one, you know, great thing happening after another, but all this shame and pent up lying and cheating. And, you know, and then I transferred my addiction to another addiction. So I started spending money. Now, that was easy. So I started getting, it's like, oh God, that thrill, you know, of buying stuff I don't need. I remember one time I told my husband, I need $500. And he goes, what for? And I go, I accidentally bought too many Victoria's Secret clothes. He goes, well, send it back. And I go, well, I already got it. And I couldn't understand that concept. It was like, no, it's mine. I was like a child. I had these childlike behaviors still. And this was sober. And this was for a good solid 10 years this went on, these types of behavior. So him and I had all of these long discussions. Okay, now you're addicted to spending. I ended up coming up with the money. I don't even know how. But I think I borrowed it from my mom or something. But, you know, it was so, the shame I felt having to tell my husband all that. I still, and then I did it, you know, I would do it again. It was like a compulsion. And it wasn't until, you know, we got a little money and we decided to move from the San Joaquin Valley. And we wanted to buy a new house. And we ended up coming here to Santa Maria. And that was about 8 years ago. And we got a house, and I ended up being away from Tulare. And every time I'd try to go to meetings in Tulare, I'd run into someone I knew or someone I was related to. And it was really hard. It was really hard to talk and to confess and to get out a real honest feeling. It was just role playing. I was doing nothing there. And I would always judge the people in the meetings and go, oh, she said this, I don't like that. You know, I'm not going back to that meeting. I'm not. So I always had an excuse. But I ended up coming here. And I, you know, my husband ended up working at UPS for like 2 more years. And then he'd stay in at a friend's house. He was renting a room. And he'd stay there during the week and come here on the weekends. And then he had like 9 weeks of vacation a year. So it was like he had a lot of time off. Anyway, he was getting ready to retire. So he was getting ready to retire. And our finances were going to change. And I was $22,000 in debt. And he didn't know it. And our finances were going to change. And I didn't know what to do. And so I came to a meeting and I sat right there. And I just, it was a woman's meeting. And I said, somebody asked me to introduce myself. Where are you from? Da, 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 da. I said, yeah, I started crying my eyes out, bawling my eyes out because I didn't know how to tell the truth to my husband. That he was going to retire, and I was going to ruin it for both of us. And, you know, this is, you know, how I had, and it was just horrific. It was a nightmare to me. And I was scared, and I ended up getting a sponsor that night, that day, that 10 a.m. meeting, woman's meeting. Got a sponsor that day, and she grabbed me by the shoulders, and she said, "You're going to tell me the truth? Or I don't want to have nothing to do with you. Do you want this?" And I go, "Yes." And I'm crying. "Yes, I want this." But I literally sit here and spill my guts and said, "I don't know how to tell the truth. I haven't drank in 10 years. And I'm an asshole." Excuse my language. Sorry, kids. And my husband doesn't know what's coming. And I'm scared. And she said, "I can help you with that." So I said, "Oh, okay, you can help me with that. Very good." So I ended up talking to her, and the first thing we talked about was the $22,000 elephant in the room. And she said, "You're just going to tell him. You're just going to go home and you're going to tell him." And I go, "Okay, no, I can't do that." She goes, "No, you're just going to tell him, or I won't be your sponsor." She threatened me. And I go, "Okay." And she goes, "Just do it, and then call me right afterwards." So I sat my husband down, and I said, "I know you're retiring in 2 years, and I'm scared because I don't know what I'm going to do. I owe $22,000, and You know, here I am. I've got money coming in. And I just don't want to pay it. I just don't want to pay it because I'm a spoiled brat. You know, I like to keep my stuff. And I don't know how to behave like an adult. And I'm 60 years old. So, anyway, I told him. In that gut-wrenching, it was like I wanted to throw up afterwards. I told him, and he goes, okay, what are you going to do about it? And I go, I guess I'll pay it back. And he goes, yeah. Then do it. Figure it out. And he wasn't mad. He just said, then do it. And he goes, if you want me to help you figure out a payment plan or something, then I'll do that with you. And I said, oh, okay, you're not mad? And he goes, why would I be mad? It's your debt. You make enough money to pay it back. He spoke to me maturely and calmly. And I was scared to death that he was going to threaten me with divorce. But that was how I used to live. That was my life up until that point. That set me up to be with my sponsor. And by doing that, I loved doing the steps with my sponsor. She said that I rammed through those steps so hard. She's never seen someone so anxious to do step four. Let's do it. Let's do it. Let's get that shit out. Let's do it. And I was so ready. I wanted what she had. I wanted what y'all have so bad. And that gut wrench, the pain I felt, being honest for the first time with a person, that gut wrenching, I mean, literally feeling like I was gonna pass out pain. I mean, getting like stars, seeing stars, like feeling like I was literally going to lose it. That's what I felt with her a lot. And what that was I was changing the way my brain works for the first time in my life. I was changing the way I thought. I was being honest for the first time in my life. In my entire life. And I was addressing my feelings for the first time in my life. And I was 60. So when I went through those steps, which I had gone through, skipped through like a 12-year-old with like people having fun and stuff, you know, just, yeah. But no, and I went through them with her. She, you know, there was tears. There was gut-wrenching pain. There were times I felt like I wanted to hit her. And I told her, I hate you. And she said, good. Then I'm doing my job. I'm not your friend. I'm here to tell you the truth. I'm here to help you to live your life. Not to babysit you. Not to have fun with you. I'm not your mother. I'm not your sister. I'm here to tell you the truth and how... This program is hard, but you can do it. It's easy if you want it. And you want it, so you're going to be fine. And I'd go, but I hate you now. And she'd go, well, good. That's good. It's working. And so we did that, and we literally ripped on through those steps. And when I got to step four, I thought it was, everybody told me, oh God, step four is so hard. I got to do step four. I'm stuck on step four. I'm stuck on step four. I love step four. It was so nice to finally see that what my part was in everything that I blamed everybody else for, you know, what my part was. And to be, and every time I'd say, well, I don't get it. I don't get it. How is this that? You know, how is that my fault when he did this? And she'd go, because you were there. You put yourself there and you didn't walk away. You could have walked away, but you froze. And then, you know, and there's no time to sit there and dwell on childhood trauma. You know, what happened in my childhood. You know, she wasn't there to coddle me and say, well, you know, you might be having this problem because of this. No, she never did any of that. She never did it. She said, no, you can deal with that on your own with the therapist. Right now, we're going to talk about the truth and your part in it. And once you get to that point, then you can talk about your childhood trauma more realistically and honestly. And she served me so well. And I will never, ever be able to repay her for what she did for me. And it changed the way I communicated with my husband. It changed the way I communicated with my kids. And I made my apologies. And I called my family members that I had passed out at their weddings. And they go, oh, honey, it's okay. And I remember asking my sisters, why didn't you guys tell me I was passing out at weddings? And they go, oh, why would we tell you that? You're not the only one. You know, it wasn't a big deal. So I came from this home that enabled me so much so. And it went on for years. And I'll never, ever be able to thank my sponsor enough for, you know, being tough with me and making me, or not making me, allowing me the grace and the questions. She answered all my questions because I wanted to know why I couldn't figure things out. And I said, I don't even, you know, I was raised a Catholic. And, you know, it was like, oh, you're going to hell. You're going to hell. You're going to hell for thinking bad thoughts. You're going to hell for this. You're going to hell for, you know, wrecking your brother's car. You're going to hell for coming home drunk last night. You're going to hell. Go to church and confess. And it was so confusing. And I literally ran away from God. I felt like an atheist. I did not go to church anymore. But I found myself, I find myself now being able to embrace a higher power. My God doesn't punish. He doesn't require that I sit in a room. He just, you know, my higher power is a loving, gentle, caring God. And I pray to him to guide my day every morning now. And there's more, you know, that's the good thing about, you know, having done my steps 8 years ago, I've been coming to meetings, you know, regularly, and I'd slack off every once in a while. You know, it's like, I'm so tired. You know, they're so boring because the old behavior doesn't go away. It's still back there. It's still in there. That old behavior. It's like I can do a 180 in a second, and I don't come to meetings, and I start getting real glitchy and real twitchy, and I think about cheating, and I think about, yeah, I could steal that water bottle at Walmart. They won't know. You know, they're not looking. I, it's like, what am I thinking? You know, who is that person? So I need to come back to meetings. This is my church. This is where I come closer to God, by hearing your stories, by hearing that I'm just like him. Just like that guy. I've been in prison. I don't know if you've been in prison, but I have. That's another story. I didn't even want to talk about that. But it was just for 8 months. So anyway. But yeah. The thing about it is that it isn't over yet. And now I started noticing that my kids, they drink now. So they come to my house. We have Thanksgiving. Guess what they want to do? They want to party. And I don't know how to tell them to stop. I don't know how to tell them, hey, You can't do that in my house now. I want to go to bed at this time. I don't have any boundaries. So guess what I started doing? I started going to Al-Anon. So Al-Anon, I go to Al-Anon now. And now I know how to deal with the alcoholics. And guess what I learned? I learned that I'm just like all these Al-Anon people. I'm okay. And I'm with people who are dealing with other alcoholics that they love and they care about. And they don't want to toss out of their life. They want to lovingly disconnect, or they want to embrace them and help them on their way, you know, but not get angry with them because they're drinking. So there is so much more to this program. There's more than just AA. Once you've been in here a while, if you're having a problem with the people around you that drink, go to Al-Anon, because they will show you the way. There's people in there that have been going to Al-Anon for 30 years. I met the woman that started the meeting in Orchid 35 years ago. And she was at the Lions Club listening to all those crazy alcoholics, 30 crazy alcoholics, and wondering why they're all laughing and having fun. Three women sitting in another room. They started an Al-Anon meeting. Now that woman, oh God, there's some wonderful people in Al-Anon. But so I've learned boundaries now. Now I have boundaries. And just learning how to handle not drinking, that's just part of it. There's so much more. There's a lot more. And I hope you got a little out of it. I don't know. Y'all want to know about prison? No, I'm just kidding.